Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, the 3rd of August.
Yeah, it is. Is it somehow all day? When I've been looking at the date, I'm like, what is, there's something about that date. Is there something about this date, 8-3? Is it something?
Not that I know of. Yeah. I know there's the Ides of March, but I don't think that's in August.
I don't think so. I don't know. Anyway, it's been rainy down here. We've had massive thunderstorms every day when, right on schedule, pretty much at 4 in the afternoon. I will tell you, this weekend I was taking the boat out on Sunday, and I put the boat down off the lift because the tide was going to be really low, and I thought that maybe it was going to be a little bit too low for the lift to get my boat off the lift, right? Because it sits up on the lift. And I put it on the dock and came back, did the podcast over the weekend, and came back to my house and look up, and the sky is just turning black. I look at my weather forecast, I'm like, where'd this come from? It looks like it's going to end soon. But it doesn't end. It goes on for about an hour or so. Forget it. I'm not doing this. I take the boat. I put it back on the lift. Go inside the house. It's sunny in 5 minutes.
Yeah, Florida weather is great.
That was my day. That was so frustrating. So frustrating. Yeah. Kind of like the markets, you know? Things were doing that same kind of maneuver today. Moving down off the open really hard. And then all of a sudden, everybody's so excited. Let's just keep on buying to get the S&P 500 an all-time high again. The NASDAQ closed, the Dow Jones closed, and it looks to me that the more potential for COVID outbreaks, pandemic, lockdowns,
Let's face it, COVID was good news for the market the first time around.
Yeah, why not do it again?
Go again. Let's do a double.
Yeah. And we're seeing earnings season coming out pretty well. Everything is just fine there. A couple of hiccups here and there. Clorox come out with earnings tonight, and they guided down, said, you know, we're not going to make the numbers like we made last year. Worst day for Clorox since, I think, 2009. No, 1999. It was some really long time ago. Bad move for them. So that was on the heels of...
Doesn't make any sense.
You would think it'd still go well. They guided down, though. They weren't interested in trying to keep everything elevated. Who knows? Maybe they're trying to buy their stock at a cheaper price. Down 20 bucks today, maybe down.
That's a good idea. Well, maybe, because there seems to me that Clorox would be way up because of all the disinfectant needs.
But they came out and said, the management said in their conference call and in their earnings expectations and guidance, that we're past the hump. Nobody is. Which is why there's more COVID. Nobody's cleaning anymore.
That's funny.
Right? No mask. That means maybe we don't. We'll just use water. It's clear. Just use water on the tables in the restaurants. We don't have to Clorox everything down and disinfect. They said their disinfectants and Clorox main bleach has been down, but also many of their other products, like their wipes and other types of products they have, are down significantly. So there you go. I mean, we're all pretty much washing everything down dramatically in the beginning of this whole thing, right? You heard the stories about people would get their bags from the grocery delivery and they would spray them down and wash everything.
Yeah, you get to see videos of people doing spray the cup of Coke.
Right. Washing down the paper bags that came delivered in, you know, spray taking everything out of the bags. That's crazy. Crazy. What else we got? Florida, plenty of COVID here. No fish. Went out fishing this weekend all day, 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. for swordfish. There was nothing to be found, but it was beautiful. Yields, what's making them drop now? We're down to 1.17 on the 10-year, dropped down to 1.15. But yet markets are kind of back and forth. I mean, the thing is that what I find really interesting about all this, there are several possibilities. Very hard to discern what the real answer is. Is it governments around the world that have lower rates coming in and buying our bonds? Is it a safety trade where there's a rotation going into bonds after that big fall they saw last quarter? Is it a move by individuals saying, hey, you know what? I want to move out of stocks, which doesn't make sense right now, but into bonds, because, I mean, stocks going up, so it doesn't make sense they're moving out of it. It doesn't seem logical. Or is it just our Treasury buying $120 billion a month? I mean,
it's got to be the Treasury buying $120 billion a month.
Yeah, that's not. There was no bid, I think, on the Japanese 10-year today. There was like no volume. There's no transactions.
Huh.
When the government over there steps out, there's nobody else stepping in.
Well, that could be happening here too, for all we know.
It's possible. That's why they have to be so, so aggressive in their buying and not backing off, no matter what happens. So yields are an interesting situation. That's kind of leading some of the market movements right now. Masks, we have mask up, but I don't know if that's going to mean markets down. Some of the mask companies like these, like Triple M, 3M is moving up a little bit, but also ABT, Alpha Protech. That was one of the names that got a big bid during the original scare. They make masks, but not that much. It's their business, but now everybody's like, oh, we're going to mask up. And we saw Florida hospitalizations up to like record. The good news is the deaths aren't where they were. But have you seen the numbers in Florida without all the other stuff? I'm just saying.
Well, I don't know. The numbers from Florida seem like the CNN and MSNBC, everybody wants to slam Florida. So I don't pay very little attention.
Everybody always hates Florida. But there seems to be some kind of crazy amount of people. Like we're supposedly at a peak for every stat.
Yeah, I'd like to see some actual evidence of this.
I mean, I've heard of people. When was I in Florida? Where was I? Let me think. Nope, I was not in Florida. I was in New York when that happened. People were at a party. Kids were at a party. 14 of the 25 people got COVID. I mean, I know it's from somebody I know told me this, that this they were at the party. This happened. But, the other question is, what constitutes getting COVID right now without getting into a whole discussion about this? But, I mean, you're not just going to go, oh, I don't know. I was at a party. I think I should get tested because, I don't know. Kids don't do that, right? They got to have some kind of symptom.
No, kids don't do that. They know very few people do that.
Right. It has to be like, I got a sniffle, I got a fever. Something, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing, kind of a warm up here to what we're going to be talking about this evening. China continues to burn down the house. Last night, they've targeted the gaming industry, saying it's spiritual opium. Spiritual opium. Why do we have to come up with these things? These kind of weird names of things that you got to stop for a minute and think, okay, what do they mean by that, right?
They got some creative writers that happen to be in the party.
What is that actually? I don't understand what that means. So spiritual opium, I guess it is the idea that they are addicted, kids in particular, at a young age, and it's just rotting their minds, I guess.
I don't know. And China's on a rampage.
Yeah. And don't forget, you know this from your history, China is very sensitive to opium addiction. Back in the Opium Wars, right? And back in the time when I think it was the British who addicted like Shanghai with opium.
Yeah, they did that. Well, a lot of China was addicted to opium and they did it so they can get access to the tea.
Yeah, it's like, hey, let me give you this stuff and... Yeah, go chill on the couch over there.
Give us your tea.
Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, they're still irked about that.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I thought it was interesting them calling it a spiritual opium, kind of a flashback to something that's well known in China as a real hot button of the sensitivity.
Well, it's done for a reason.
Yep. All right, market update. We saw trillions more coming out. We have a bill that's making its way through the House for the roads and human infrastructure, whatever that is. It's interesting that it made its way through the first round of the process without any text. There was no text. I don't know if they just handed a pile of blank paper or what it was, or maybe just a binder, but they just had to get through all these hurdles before they could even start writing anything. Then they started writing stuff. And all these senators and these congressmen, oh, yeah, we'll do this. And no, it's not going to work. We hate this. It's still not even written. I mean, this is how they work, right?
It's like not normally, but I'm reminded of the past Nancy Pelosi comments about let's pass this bill so we can read it and see what's in it.
Yeah, that was a healthcare.
very Democrat kind of thing.
Let's just pass a bill and we'll figure out how to put things into it after the fact. We'll just keep the name the same.
I'm always reminded of these people who try to sell you, get you to sign a contract with the, don't worry about it. Just sign it.
I'll fill it in later.
And we'll fix it later if there's got any problems. Right. Really?
Yep. Yep.
How dumb do you think I am?
And now we have a this whole thing over the weekend about the eviction moratorium that was ending. It was coming to an abrupt halt at the end of July because that's when it was supposed to come to a halt. And now all these people that are getting free rent and possibly doing like a sublet to other people that are paying them and not having to pay the landlord, and the landlord's still on the hook to pay the banks.
Yeah.
It's kind of a screwy situation, right?
That's not a good situation.
So all weekend they're arguing about this and they're asking the CDC to do something about it. And there's no, the CDC is not going to know. They're not redoing it. The courts and things. And Biden now comes out tonight and he is going to put another date in the future. I think it's going to be October 1st, I believe it is, which gives two more months for certain hard hit areas that have COVID. I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. If there's no shutdowns, we haven't seen any shutdowns in the U.S., have we? I don't think so.
Not yet.
No, I don't think there's going to be. I have some reasons why.
Okay.
And we haven't seen anything really different here. And a lot of there's still 9 million job openings. And people were getting plenty of money from the government for the most part. Or they were working and getting back to work. I don't understand why we have to have this rental eviction moratorium if people aren't paying their rents at this point. Stock market at all-time highs, yields at all-time lows, stimulus flowing from every orifice of our government, jobs being put on, people in the gig economy, people working gig deals, gig jobs, side jobs, making money on the side, selling things, doing things, and getting unemployment, and they still can't pay their rent. I mean, I'm not trying to be cold, and I'm not, seriously, am I saying something? Am I wrong?
I'm sure there are, the way you described it, I'm sure there's more than one person doing exactly what you said, but I don't think that's everybody.
Clearly not, but during a market downturn, or not market, an economic downturn, a regular economic downturn, where people are out of work. For whatever the reason, people are out of work. They get a certain amount of possible money from their jobs, you know, some kind of possible payout. Then they get their unemployment. In very severe circumstances, there's enhanced unemployment like we saw. But what's with the eviction moratorium? That's what I don't understand. Somebody gets hurt. You're hurting the people that own the houses or the apartment buildings.
Yeah, some sort of a Marxist ploy.
It's just very weird. It's just very odd. I don't understand it at all. We have the topic of complacency that maybe needs to be thought about. I talked about this in depth on the Discipline Investor podcast. My idea about, you know, kind of what's showing up in the markets and where there is this kind of level of overall complacency by many investors. Just like, oh, okay, you know, nothing's going to happen. Nothing can go wrong. Last 20 years, anything that's happened has been rescued. And I think there's a lot showing up. Oftentimes when you see a significant amount of a complacency in markets, lack of concern for any of the bad news, and we've seen that. We've seen all sorts of things like airlines. Yeah, down 10% from their highs. But airlines, where American Airlines and Spirit are canceling flights due to weather as well as staff shortages.
Yeah.
Or you're starting to see mask or vaccine mandates for health clubs, movie theaters, et cetera. And the health club is, you know, the major health club like Planet Fitness down 2% today on that news. Shake Shack down 5%, but still, like, nobody really cares.
Somebody cares when you start checking the bottom line. Let's say they think that 60% of the public has been vaccinated and another full vaccination? I don't believe the number, but that's what I heard today from Fauci. and full vaccination. So, and then probably another 20% of the public is had COVID and do not need to be vaccinated, even though they keep telling them to get vaccinated anyway. And just to run the numbers up, it's just, we should be at herd immunity, but it doesn't look like that's working.
Well, now I saw something today due to the strength and the for the incredible intensity of the Delta variant that we'll have to go above 80% herd immunity.
Yeah,
I'm sure. I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, hold on a second. Isn't herd immunity a mathematical calculation of the possible variations of who intersects with who at various times that could be carriers and transmitters and receivers of a disease, regardless of the...
It should be mathematically modeled. There's no doubt about it. But not if the vaccine doesn't work.
Oh, that's different. That's a different discussion. If the vaccine doesn't work, then all bets are off. I mean, who came down with it? Graham?
Who's Graham?
The senator.
Lindsey Graham. Yeah, he got vaccinated. He got it.
Right.
I mean, Eric Clapton got vaccinated. He got it. There's a lot of people that got vaccinated and they got it. You probably would have gotten it, except you smoke cigars, it looks like.
Ah, see? And rinse with whiskey. let's see here again, just to touch on this, just to finish off this idea of the evictions, quote, given the rising urgency of containing the spread of the Delta variant, the president asked the CDC to consider it and they didn't do it. So he did it. I don't know. I guess the other thing that we have to look at is the unemployment cliff that's happening. Millions of jobless Americans are poised to lose COVID era. It's called COVID era now. It's the COVID era. It's the COVID times. Their income support in about a month's time. The impending benefits cliff appears different from others that loomed this past year when Congress was able to keep aid flowing after 11th hour legislative deals. This is where I find it really interesting. More than 9 million people were receiving such assistance as of July 10th, according to the Labor Department. About 7.5 million will still be collecting benefits by the time they end in September 6th. They'll lose their entitlements to benefit at that time. So that's the extra or the state. What's interesting is there's 8 or 9 million job openings. There's 9 million people unemployed right now. There's kind of this number of 9 million. You have to wonder if there is still a major amount of the population that's like, you know, listen, I'm getting $200 from the state. I'm getting $300 or whatever the number is from the federal for the extended. And, you know, I'm kind of making a few things under the table. I know plenty of people that have got side gigs going, you know, unreportable.
That's what you do if you didn't want to take one of these. I mean, yeah, there's 9 million jobs available, but are they good jobs? It seems unlikely. There are people who've been gobbling them up.
You would think. I was talking to a young person that just got a job. He's had a job for a while. He gets a job. This is a true story. Tonight, I had this discussion. And started Monday and said, I'll let you know what I think. I'm like, oh, good. I'm glad to hear things are going well. He says, well, you know, I'll give it a week. See how it goes. I'm thinking, what? What do you mean? How does that work? I'm like, give it a week. See how it goes. See if I like the vibe. That's how it is these days, right?
Yeah, there's a bunch. I got stories I've told. My favorite one is the guy who I was talking to a guy that does installations of cable and fiber optics. And they can't get anybody to work there. He says, and one kid, he says, the best story is, I've told the story before, kid takes a day off. Just takes a day off. I'm not working today. It doesn't work. Doesn't come in. And then take another day off. And then it comes in after 2 or 3 days off, casually comes in, starts to work. What are you doing? You can't just come in when you feel like it. He says, What difference does it make? You're not paying me when I'm not working here.
Yeah. Never thought about the work that has to be done. And what happened to the idea that work doesn't have to make you necessarily feel good all the time?
I think this is the base of the whole thing. It's been going on too long. The old passion, if it's something you like to do, it's not a job, and all the nonsense where it just, you know, you should only do what you think is great and something that you really want to do. I mean, it's childish. It's like the little kid who wants to be a fireman. You know, it's just the same thing, only they grew up. I don't want to do that job. It's too much work. I don't like the idea of having to scrape paint. Nah, that's not for me. I don't have any passion for it. It's very common, very common.
It seems to me that somebody just needs to get through the heads of the people that are not working. The whole point of working is to earn money. That's the point of working. The base case, right? The baseline of all of it.
Yeah, it's not to feel good.
It's not to feel good. Now, if you have the opportunity to do something great, really make your mark, and do something that you love at the same time, well, that's a bonus. But not everybody gets to be a
podcaster.
Yeah, right, or a superhero or whatever. I mean, there's, you know, not everybody gets that. Some people just grind it out for years.
Yeah. Yeah. So, otherwise, you'd have no janitors.
Exactly. Boosters. This is big news. Big, big news. A lot of the, if you look at the stocks of Pfizer and BioNTech and Moderna, loving all this. Germany will start giving out COVID-19 booster shots next month. The UK. Well,
good for Germany.
Yep. The UK will start giving 32 million booster shots next month. Pfizer, Moderna raising prices on their vaccines. Smart.
Oh, what did they raise them to?
I don't know. There's some story. They're just inching up prices right now.
Huh. I knew the original prices of all these shots.
You have to wonder if the second boosters are going to be paid by the government as well. I guess they will.
In Canada, for sure, they bought stockpiles of Pfizer for the next 5 years.
I don't know. It seems to me this is going to be, you know, if there's a thought, first of all, the COVID booster shots starting next month from Germany, that's pretty quick in terms of from the first to the booster.
Yeah. Well, most of the shot in Germany wasn't at the front of the line like we were. So they started getting, there's what, in March? So you got March, April, May, June, July. We got 6 months. In other words, 6 months later.
Yeah.
And less than 6 months from the second shot, obviously. So 6 months later, you already need another shot.
Well, we don't know.
Another one is 6 months after that.
First, we don't know if you need another shot. Second, we don't know if the booster will work. There's been no testing on it. Right? This is the AstraZeneca, I think, too. And if it is, if without getting scientific here, because I don't know what I'm talking about, let's just get that straight, okay? But you would think there's one thing about the old-fashioned flu shot that gives you like kind of the flu and it kind of percolates and gives you the antibodies and stuff like that. If we have an mRNA shot, isn't that supposed to be a programming?
Yeah.
So
it's supposed to be.
What happens? Does it get hacked? It loses its programming?
Well, that brings me back to the point. Maybe it doesn't work.
God. So I'll get to this in a second, but I'm just going to tease this and mention it again that I do not think, for a lot of reasons, under any circumstances, we are going to see widespread lockdowns in the U.S. And I'm going to talk about that, but they're going to kind of push this whole other issue. They're going to, you know, talk about the remasking and indoor-outdoor vaccine mandates, which I still don't understand. You didn't get the shot, but you've seen the card. The card is a flimsy piece of paper. It's a little, you know, like a little index card.
Yeah, it's an index card.
With some scribbles on it, that don't even have like an official stamp or anything.
I know. You think they, well, my daughter had gotten the Johnson & Johnson and they put these little stickers, official looking stickers on the card and some signatures and a lot number sticker. There's quite a bit of stuff on there, but I've seen cars that just kind of scribbled. Somebody scribbled up.
Yeah, mine has a lot number on it and has the date, but I could have done that just as easily and say, "Yep, here's my vaccine card."
Yeah, well, that's what a lot of people supposedly did at Lollapalooza. These cards are until a couple of months ago, Wyoming Department of Health, and I know this because I looked at it because somebody sent a link around to the No Agenda social networking Twitter clone. They say there it is, and you click on this Wyoming Department of Health, and there is the template for this card. Ugh. So you could print it on your own printer, or you can, you know, whatever you wanted to do.
As far as I know, there's no centralized database. And if you have Wyoming and you're in, whip out a Wyoming card in Connecticut.
It's the same card, even in Wyoming. And all the cards are this is that one card that everyone's seen.
Ridiculous.
But they happen to post the template for doctors in Wyoming, and you could download the template and print it up. I mean, I could have done that if I wanted. I'm California, everyone's vaxxed up. I'm not too concerned about it.
Well, Lyft, speaking about companies that were affected very significantly from the lockdowns, the pandemic, Lyft preliminary results came in this evening. The quarter two results were a loss, again a loss, but only 5 cents versus 25 cents. Revenues were $765 million versus the $700 million Capital IQ consensus. And there was some other talk about they were actually EBITDA positive for the first time, the path to profitability. So they figured out a way to get EBITDA that, you know, to mess with the earnings before.
Yes, go cooking the books.
Right, right. They came up
anytime a way. Anytime somebody starts talking about EBITDA.
Yeah, yeah.
You know there's something's up.
Yeah. And they found a way to somehow have some ratio and number and accounting methodology that was actually a positive number. For example.
Sure.
If you were to have revenues only, you could say that you were profitable. No expenses, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
So you extract out some things and you whatever, and you come up with a little side money over here, move that to the next quarter. That's not paid. That's done. Okay. Anyway, the stock was up nicely for a little bit there. I think it finished up flat in the after hours. The story that I thought was most interesting after hours tonight, even though we saw some things last week with Amazon coming down, one of the worst days Amazon had in a long time, hit their numbers, but not so great on the overall. Missed a little bit on the revenue expectation. Really wasn't a blowout. Stock was near an all-time high. Fell about 7.5% last Friday. But the story that I found most interesting was Avis Budget. This is the rental car companies that were theoretically out of business, selling off everything they had.
Yeah.
And
when they had that weird stock dipsy do where it's down pretty much bankrupt and then all of a sudden it got run up somehow.
And Hertz did the same thing. Now, Hertz also did go bankrupt, but somehow the shareholders came out with a sweet deal. Don't even ask me how that's possible. I know a guy that bought it like $1.50. I'm like, what are you doing? So I'm buying Hertz. I'm like, it's a Q. There's a Q after the symbol, which means it's, there's something going on. And I looked, they're going bankrupt. They probably usually wipe out the shareholder. No, you get $8 a share.
Yeah, that's what you call a guy with some second sense.
Yeah.
Either that or he had an insight, knew what was going to happen.
And this is kind of the weird thing. I mean, I had a client call me because, hey, I'm in the oil business. I want to buy these two stocks. I'm like, let me look. I'm like, there's some pending. These things are going down. You know, these are going bankrupt. Reorgs. So I think it'll be doing fine. I looked the other day, they're zeroed out. But I don't know where people were all excited and where the people got the idea to actually buy bankrupt companies. It just, I don't know, just by the very nature of not even knowing finance, the thought of buying a bankrupt company doesn't quite make sense to me.
Like I said, with that Hertz deal, someone had to know something was going on.
Maybe. So Avis Budget, again, even with all of this, then the competition with Lyft and Uber, right? So you got a multitude of issues going on here, right? Lack of travel, COVID, the problems they had. That reported second quarter earnings of $5.90 a share, excluding non-recurring items, $4.63 better than the Capital IQ consensus of $1.27. Revenues rose 212% year over year, which is kind of expected to a bit. To $2.37 billion versus the $2.01 billion. In the conference call, this is what was said. This is what's so fascinating. This is the best quarter result in our company's history. Rental cars, the best quarter in their history.
How does that work?
And it's a validation of the hard work our team has put in since the pandemic began, said Joe Ferrara, Avis Budget Group's CEO. He says the momentum we saw in the second quarter is expected to continue through the summer, and our team will be ready to take advantage of increased demand while maintaining rigorous cost discipline. So I think a part of this is that they had some cars. They probably sold off some cars that were in their fleets.
They had to sell off a lot of cars, but they sold off into a hot market.
Yeah, that's number one. Number two, I rented a car recently in Montauk, Long Island, when I was up there, and it cost me $590 for 3.5 or 4 days, I'll call it.
That's the other thing. I've noticed that the car, people are bitching about this. The car rental prices are through the roof.
Yeah. So you probably have less people working for you because that's how things are going these days. Less service. People are like, they'll understand. You know what? You don't have to clean the room in the hotel every day. Hey, what are you going to do? Just have one guy. They'll wait in line. People understand right now. You cut your staff to the bone. You keep whatever cars that you had. You possibly mark up your inventory, sell a few off, maybe. And then you jack your prices.
Yeah. Well, gouging the public is not a good long-term strategy.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to work. But you know, and then people, I guess, I don't know why people, and I think people were also very interested in just getting out and didn't care what it costs. You know, I don't know.
There's an element, obviously an element to that.
Yeah. Fed, you know, we're talking about the potential for the Fed to taper eventually, one day maybe. So this week we have coming up, tomorrow is the ADP unemployment numbers where we see the private payrolls, and we're going to see the initial claims on Thursday and the official unemployment report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics on Friday, looking to hopefully get a little bit better. But everything's looking like there's some concern about these numbers coming out ahead of them because we're seeing the interest rates fall so dramatically. Well, interestingly, on Friday, or... No, it was Monday. Fed Governor Christopher Waller, see, in an interview, he said, if the next two jobs reports come in strong, he thinks the Fed has met its condition of substantial further progress and could taper in September. There is no reason to go slow on tapering. So you got another trial balloon being sent up there, right? With another Fed governor saying, hey, you know, we're going to throw it out there that we're going
to just to see what happens. Just say this and see what happens.
Nothing happened. Tape didn't move. Bonds didn't move. In fact, bonds came down. More buying. Then you have a couple of things here. First, got to dissect this, right? This is what's so fascinating about how the Fed works these days. It's kind of a black ops mission, right? It's a need to know what they actually know. So he says, if the next two jobs reports come in strong, what does that mean? How strong? Is there a number? Is there a level? What does that mean? If the water's too cold.
Doesn't mean anything. It's like the people say our COVID cases are up 400%.
Yeah, I mean.
Does it mean they had one and now they got four?
Right. I mean, so it's kind of like, you know, well, I'll stay in the pool unless the water's too cold. Well, too cold for who? What, you know, is it when I just get in? Is it when I'm in there for a while? What are you talking? There's no.
Right. There's nothing solid. No,
there's nothing index. There's nothing to say. It's all just kind of
vague.
Right. So he said, then if that happens, the Fed has met its condition of substantial further progress. Again, that's their term. They talk about this a lot. We need to make sure we have substantial further progress. Now, what does that mean? Again, what does the word substantial mean? What is the further progress? What does that mean in terms of the numbers? You follow what I'm saying here?
Yeah, obviously.
It's totally nonsense.
They're just fuzzy. Yeah, it's total nonsense. That's what it really is, yes.
Total nonsense. And then he says, if that all happens, which we don't know how do you know if that happens? If that all is true, so it's like, you know, if these two conditions are true that are not able to be pinned down of what those would be, right? Then we could taper in September. So what happens if one is strong, one is weak, then the next one's strong? That doesn't work. Do we average that? I mean, the point I'm making here is for those people listening that kind of know that I rant about the Fed every so often. But in this environment,
with good reason,
in this environment, they're just, you know, all they're doing is constantly putting a carrot out there because it's a confidence game. And I don't really necessarily mean that in a bad way, but more of a factual way. It's a confidence game. As long as there's confidence in the markets, the fact that the Fed will be there, the fact that the government, it's just like the dollar bill. What's the, John, what's the dollar bill backed by?
It's backed by the goodwill of the American system.
Right. What does that mean? It's not
It
really-
means that all of our net, if you just put everything together as our net worth and you bust it up into little pieces, that would be dollars.
But essentially, it's still very vague, right?
It's the manufacturing value.
Right.
Yeah.
In theory. But really, yeah. but really, it's a confidence game. As long as we believe.
Doesn't mean anything. Yeah. Right. No, it's but it's accepted. And once, as long as people don't lose faith in it.
Right. Which I think why the belief in heaven and hell is so wonderful in religion, because you can't really necessarily prove it, but you can't disprove it either. Keeps people in line. The fact that you do something bad, you're going to hell, Johnny.
Yeah, well.
So maybe I just won't do that thing.
Yep, well, it's part of it.
Yep.
Well, don't forget, confidence is also part of con, as in con man, con game, and it comes from a confidence game. And so there's a con here.
It is. There is a bit of a con. And the truth is that right now we're in a situation where if numbers come out good, we know the Fed will be there for long term, keeping rates down anyway, because they did, in fact, commit to that for a long period of time. And the numbers are bad. The Fed's there anyway, so what's the hell difference? Just whatever it is, it's good. And if, in fact, we see a drop lower, it's a good time to buy. You know, you saw a 10% drop in the small caps and people started buying it again.
Yeah.
We'll see if that starts to happen with the Chinese stocks. We'll see if that happens with certain other areas. But
Chinese stocks, these guys are out of control. Yeah,
bad. Pretty bad. Barbecues. So during the pandemic, a lot of things got popular, right? Eating at home became very popular.
Yeah, for people who couldn't cook. I'm surprised a lot of people didn't die.
But people started buying pots and pans and all sorts of kitchenware. We saw the price of Williams-Sonoma drive up, which was great because we owned that for the TDI Managed Growth Portfolio, something I would have never purchased. But what happened was it came through one of our screens and mandates that we buy that for the portfolio. We bought that. It was up dramatically. And I'm like, I cannot believe this thing. And the thing just kept going up and up and up and up and up. And then we saw there was a quarter when it came out of the screen. We got out of it and relatively close to the high of where it was. And it's kind of rolled over a bit. But people got into cooking. They got into living at home, getting new sofas, right? Wayfair was jacked up pretty good. We saw Restoration Hardware where you could buy a couch for a mere, you know, $6,000 for just a two-piece. And the other thing that got very popular was barbecues. Smokers. Did you get anything new in that area during?
Not during COVID. No, I loaded to the gills with outside cooking gear.
Yeah. Well, you know that I've been doing a lot of cooking, and Traeger came public last week.
Yeah.
My favorite pellet smoker, which gives you an easier way to smoke, although not all the smoke
gives flavor. It gives you like a programmable way. Gee, it's almost as like an oven.
It is, and it has some smoke. In fact, the only way I get good smoke is by putting another entire little unit of pellets and chips inside there that I ignite with a torch and let it burn itself inside the smoker so I can get actual smoke in there. They try to give you this whole con job that you shouldn't see any smoke coming out of your smoker. It should be a very thin blue.
You should see a lot of smoke coming out of your smoker.
Honestly, I want to see it like bellowing to a point that my neighbors are calling the fire department.
That's the way I cook.
Yeah.
I will cook it with raw oak.
Yeah.
And then once it gets to the stage where it starts to just makes a mess and it smokes up the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's the way.
But everyone knows what my neighbors all know what I'm up to, and they like the smell of oak. It's a delicious smell.
The problem with the pellets in the pellet grills is they don't make a lot of smoke because what they're really doing is burning to heat the grill up. If you have them on a very low temperature, just kind of in there. And you can't put any, you can't moisten them because then they just expand and you can't go through the.
Oh, you can't. It won't work.
Yeah, it won't work. So what you want is like this little thing called the Amaze. If you, anybody that wants a little smoking thing, there's a couple of different things. A company called Amazin or Amazin Smoke. Look up Amazin Smoke.
Aftermarket yeah. smoking device for a Traeger.
Yeah, so what? It's not by Traeger, but
before the Traeger.
Right. There's a tube, and you fill up your. You could use this for a regular barbecue too. You could fill up this thing with pellets, or I go pellets and chips. I kind of mix it up, and then you blowtorch it for a couple minutes or light it up. Let it just sit there for a minute or so. And what happens is it slowly but surely continues just to smoke. Upwards of 3 hours in the tube.
Smolder.
It's really nice smoke that comes out of it. So anyway, so Traeger went public. The symbol is Cook, COOK. Stock was nicely moving above its IPO, breaking out on Tuesday today to all-time highs. I think it was up 10% today. So that's interesting. Weber, the... You know those guys. Weber is going to be coming up, their IPO. And the barbecue guys, have you ever been to their website?
No.
So the barbecue guys came in with kind of, I would say, reviews in the beginning of various barbecues and smokers. They had a nice kind of, what would it be called? The Yelp of barbecues and smokers and equipment and things like that. And articles.
So it's like Tire Rack.
Yeah, exactly. And they got more and more popular. And then what they started doing was putting the links where you could, buy this one, number one.
Yeah, that we link here. Yeah, that's an old game.
IPOing for $900 million.
Wow.
Small company, but still pretty substantial.
Yeah, well, it's a big IPO. I'm sure they all retire after that thing comes out. They won't stay in business.
Yeah, start a whiskey business and a cigar business.
That's what they do.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we all have to, figure out which one's good and bad and buy them before they go out of business. Let's see what else we got. All right, we got a fraudster. Fraudster alert. You remember the guy named Trevor Milton? You may not.
No, not really.
You do, because I'm going to tell you who he was. He was one of the founders of electric vehicle company Nikola.
Oh, yes, Nikola.
And
what a creative name.
Yeah. Yeah. Nikola Tesla. He took the first name of that. You knew there was something wrong to begin with this, right?
Yeah. When you do something like that, something's up.
You know, that he, one of the things that gave him away was a pretty poorly done publicity stunt, or it wasn't a publicity stunt at the time. It was actually a way for you to take a look at the internal workings of one of their wonderful and they're beautiful. It was beautiful. One of the trucks, one of their big, 18-wheeler front enders, right?
Yeah.
And it was riding. I was like, whoa. So they got this thing working. But you know what they did? Remember this? Do you remember what
it was the downhill thing. There was somebody tilted the camera.
Right. And it was downhill. So it's one of the three electric vehicle startups that are under investigation. Well, he is charged with federal fraud charges. But two others, the others are Lordstown Motors and Canoe. So a lot of these EV companies, they got all sorts of money. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the .com where it was like, just throw the money at them and hopefully something sticks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what's happening here.
Well, Solyndra comes to mind too. It's kind of the sudden emergence of all these solar cell operations when it turns out that China makes them so much cheaper, nobody can compete.
Yep. BNPL, something we talked about probably 6 to 8 months ago that was becoming very popular, something that I said and we both decided was an important issue to keep on the radar, which is buy now and pay later. The old installment plan at Macy's, remember that?
Yep.
The old layaway plan at JCPenney. Basically, Square, which is Dorsey, he said on Monday they agreed to purchase Buy Now, Pay Later, Pioneer Afterpay to create a global online payment giant, 30% premium in a all-share swap deal from Australia. Created in 2014, Afterpay has been the bellwether of the niche no-credit checks online payment sector that burst into the mainstream last year as more people, especially youngsters, chose to pay installments for everyday items during the pandemic. Don't we have something called credit cards? I don't understand.
Well, if you can't get a credit card, although you can just buy a cash card.
Actually, good point you make there. That's a really good point. A lot of youngsters, as they call it in this discussion, don't have credit cards. They have debit cards. And you can't buy something without paying it off at the end of the month with a debit card, right?
No, you can't. No. So that's not how a debit card. No, you have to have the money already.
Yeah. So what's happened? Right, exactly. It's not even a bill. It's just
it's kind of the smart card they were talking about years ago, where the money, and there's a word for it. It's not coming to me, but the money is already in the card, and you just extract
it's like loaded.
Preloaded.
Yeah, and so now here, what's happening is a lot of people want to pay on installments like the old days, and they didn't want to get into too much debt, right? Because they want to keep on. But what all they're doing here, this is a twist on the old way of sucking people into credit cards. But now you have loans on every single item that you buy in a buy now, pay later situation versus a consolidated credit card. What's happening is that the buy now, pay later companies take a piece of the price of the product. So basically, that different than the credit card companies, where they would take just a 20% if that's the case, right? Or 3% charged to the vendor. What happens here is they take a piece of the price of the product as well as interest on the micro note. So in other words, the skimming from the company and also getting paid a higher rate from
the
installments.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah, this is it's like something that Warren Buffett would like.
Yes, exactly.
It's like a slam dunk.
This is a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. It's a
great idea.
How do you lose? The only way you lose is you do different than the installment. So for those of you that don't know what the installment plan was, or the layaway plan, a little different, the layaway plan, you would basically get a note from the place you bought it from, and you'd have to pay it off. Layaway was you would put it, they'd put it somewhere for you. Remember that? They'd put it somewhere in the store?
Supposedly, and you kept paying for it until you finally got it paid off, and then they'd give it to you.
Yeah. So
it was just a method to, it's like a forced savings.
Right. And was a milk fund? What was the other forced savings plan? Remember that other one? Christmas club. Remember the Christmas clubs?
Well, if you're going to go into weird things, let's talk about green stamps.
Oh yeah. Tell me about that.
And blue stamps. There's blue. So first was green stamps was the original.
S&H
green stamps.
Yeah.
And so when you went to the store, you'd buy something and they have this funny device. It was like a second cash register. And they would pull down, you spent $20.20. They would pull down $20.20 off of this device and a bunch of stamps would come out. And there's these little stamps. They're very small. And then you'd get these stamp books and you fill the stamp books up. And then when you had a bunch of books, you'd go to the redemption center and you'd take your 10 books or 100 books or whatever many books you needed. And you could buy stuff with the books, the pure books. This is a 10 books, 5 books or whatever it was. And then they were so successful that blue stamps came around. And that was the second big one. And blue stamps was very popular. And then there was a third one, which is more obscure to the most of the audience. And I actually have some of these stamps somewhere in my collection of junk. There was the James Brown stamps.
Oh, really?
And it had little pictures of James Brown. And the black stores would have the James Brown stamps. It was the same thing. You'd collect them and put books together. And then when blue stamps came out, I think they had more redemption centers and there was more of them. And it was a little more aggressive, I think, than S&H. S&H always was the leader, the original. But there's maybe even some earlier than these. These were all in the 50s, I think, was when it really blossomed, the 60s maybe a little bit. And it died. Just died overnight. It was the
precursor to credit card points and miles. And I'm not going to press you on whatever.
Yeah, so it's pretty much like it was a early points. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not going to press you on what a black store is. I just want to let everybody that's listening. I'm not pressing them on it. I'm not going there. I'll just let it go.
There'd be grocery stores in black neighborhoods is what I'm saying. And they would be the stores. It could be any, so it could be a Safeway. Could be any, didn't need to be
black. A predominantly black neighborhood.
But it was a predominantly black neighborhood, and they would have these James Brown stamps, and you'd get those there instead of the green stamps.
Well, I'm sure when you got them, you said, I feel good. all right, so that's what's going on in that area. We have some other things like little issues with regard to the amount of debt we have outstanding right now. We have the debt ceiling coming around again, that discussion that seems to happen every so often. The Treasury Department will begin conducting emergency cash conservation steps as of this week to avoid busting the federal borrowing limit after a 2-year suspension of the debt ceiling expiration, and that had expiration at the end of July. Economists said those so-called extraordinary measures will allow Treasury to pay off the government's bills without floating new debt for about 2 to 3 months. After that, Congress will need to raise or suspend the borrowing limit or risk the U.S. defaulting on its obligations, which is not going to happen. But the new debt limit will include Washington's additional borrowing this since the summer of 2019, which is the new cap's going to have to come in somewhere at about $28.5 trillion from about $22 trillion in August of 2019.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Housing boom. Is it over? Sales of newly built homes dropped in June to the lowest level since the early days of the coronavirus pandemic in April of 2020, sales of single-family homes, new single-family homes, fell to an annualized rate of 676,000, 6.6% below May's rate of 724, and 19.4% below the June 2020 level of 839. Analysts are expecting these new home sales to increase by about 3.4%. And most of the problem is that the home buying and most of the home buying that's occurring is at the higher end of the market, and builders can't afford to put up affordable houses due to skyrocketing construction costs, whether it's from the leftover lumber problems, or copper, or anything that they can't get their hands on, the extremely expensive cost for labor. So it's like a problem that most people are unable to buy a house because of cost limitations.
Well, the market seems to be, I can't say it's not still going up, but it's, I don't see as much activity.
Right.
It's not coming down.
Yeah, I still hear some crazy stories from time to time, but, and I see some of the numbers. I mean, if you look at like a Zillow report of your house, you just put in your address. So if anybody wants to do this and look at like the hockey stick at the end where it went straight up in the last 3 months, pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. A few more things that we need to get to. SoftBank Uber shares dropping as SoftBank plans to sell shares to cover Didi losses. SoftBank is selling about 1/3 of its stake in the ride-hailing company Uber. Think of a losses in its investment in Chinese ride. Why can't they just call them taxis? But okay. Now, I don't understand. How does selling Uber cover losses in Didi? How does selling a stock... I know it's a profit. It's a profit no matter whether you sell it or not. And you're going to, that means you're going to get rid of your Didi, or you're going to buy more of your Didi, or this is weird.
Well, everything about SoftBank is weird.
Yeah, that's true.
So what else is new?
Robinhood IPO came out. The company fell below its $38 IPO offering immediately, down to like 32, 33. Kathy Wood from ARK Investment started buying, and that helps shares. She bought like 50 million shares or something, $50 million worth. Robinhood now expects to swing to a net loss of $487 million in the second quarter of the year. Option trading, this is really fascinating. Option trading for Robinhood accounts for about 38% of revenue. That's a lot of revenue, especially for a company that doesn't charge commissions.
Wait, they're doing the option trading?
They're customers. Customers are trading.
Their customers are doing the options.
Yeah, they made 38% of their revenue with these are retail investors whacking on options. I can't imagine that staying there forever.
No, that's ridiculous. That's way too high.
Right. Equities and crypto are 25% and 17% respectively. It's crazy. Finished, I think, about $50 right now. All right. This is the time of the show that I was looking forward to. A little quiz for John C. Dvorak.
Uh-oh.
Yep. A little quiz. And it revolves around the Olympics. something you know about.
Yeah, I watch them. I watch the Olympics. I'm very disappointed.
In what regard?
Oh, they'll show like the 1500 meter women's swim event, which takes 10 minutes to run back and forth and back and forth. And they cut. You can't see one boxing match.
You know what
was
on TV?
Where's the boxing matches?
Tonight, I went home, get a little dinner before I come back to the office, do the podcast. Do you know what was on? The women's swimming marathon. Do you know how long that goes?
They show the whole thing.
2 hours. They talk the whole thing.
And then they show these bike. There's a 4-man bicycle race. Have you seen this?
On one bicycle?
No, there's 4 bicycles, after the other. And they're going at the same speeds around and around for time. It's boring. It's the most boring thing I can imagine. Yeah. But yet, do they show us a baseball game or some boxing? It's always exciting. They show none of that.
No. Yeah.
They're just showing, the stuff they're showing is stinks. It's boring.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's the questions. We all know that winning a medal brings money to the medal winner. Gold, silver, bronze, right? You know this.
I hope so. Yeah.
Paid by the countries. So I got a list of what countries paid what. And before you look, don't look at it.
I won't.
I'm giving you 2 guesses to what potentially could be the highest paid country or what country pays the highest for medals, for either a gold, silver, or bronze. If you want a hint, I'll give you 2 hints. If you'd like.
What's the one hint?
I'll give you a hint if you want. I'll give you 2 hints. Yeah. Yeah. First hint, it's an Asian country.
Okay.
You need another hint? Hawker stalls.
And what was the set? What did you say?
Hawker stalls.
Hawker stalls.
Hawker stalls, yep.
Yeah. The highest paid would Asian country. I'm assuming it's not China. If it's China,
no, not China. Not even on the list. I'll give you 1 more hint.
Okay.
Don't throw your gum on the sidewalk.
So in other words, what you're telling me is Singapore.
Correct.
Is number one.
$737,000 for a gold medal.
Wow.
$369 for silver and $184 for bronze.
What does the U.S. pay?
Going down the list. $37,000, $22,000, $15,000.
That stinks compared to Singapore.
Number 2? I couldn't give you a hint if I wanted to, just first of all.
Okay.
Kazakhstan.
Wow.
$250, $150, $75,000. Malaysia, $236.
That's good money.
Yeah, $236. That's good money. This is a big differential. Malaysia. They only want winners in Malaysia. $236. 71-24. Who else is here? Let's see who's on the list. Brazil, 49. Japan, 45. South Africa, 37. Canada, 16. Australia, 15.
Canada gives $16,000 to a gold?
Yes.
What a bunch of cheap bastards.
Yeah. And it's probably taxed at like 75% too.
Yeah.
In the U.S., it's... In the U.S., I think up to $1 million of income, these are tax-free. And you win it, you win this every time you win a gold. So you win 5 golds, you got, 10 golds, you got $370,000. Collect them up, make some money.
Yeah, it's like the Nobel Prize. Some of these awards are tax-free.
Yep. We're going to kind of skip a few things about China and a few other things and a thought question about this because we have to talk about 2 things. Number 1, if you enjoy the show, if you hate the show, if you love the show, if you like John, you don't like me, vice versa. Hey, do us a favor. Go over and tell us what you think by putting your money where your mouth is. Go over to the DH Unplugged site. Click on the yellow button. Donate to help out the cause, help out the show, defray the cost of the various items we have, whether it's prizes for winners, whether it's people that run the website, whether it's the servers, et cetera, that would be very helpful. We do have a winner to announce from last week's Advanced Micro Devices, close to the pin. That is Keith N. Comes in at, this is how bad people did for this one, okay?
I knew it was going to be bad.
6.5% away. Runner-up was 9.5% away. Price closed at 106. The average entry was 90. That's the average entry was like 12, 13% away. Is that right? No.
Yeah.
More than that, 15% away. Unbelievable.
I don't know how anyone can do the AMD is out of control.
Yeah. Good stuff. Very good stuff. I think that's what we have right there. Listen to the No Agenda Show each and every Thursday, Sunday. Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak. You can listen to all the ways that they deconstruct the news, as Adam calls it. He calls it something in the beginning of the show. It's a great media assassination. And you definitely have to listen to that. We'll get to the spiritual opium discussion, which I think was really important to talk about another time, because we got to talk about something else.
This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures.
So, you take it.
All right. Well, first of all, the train technologies continues to march ahead, up 130%. But it looks like the only possible stock that might catch it if something bad happened is my pick of the FVC Bank Corp.
Oh, you're thinking if the train's got to come down versus FVC coming up?
I'm trying to come up. You're not coming down anytime soon. And so that's 87% gain. So those are two winners.
Yeah.
And including Medtronic, which was picked after it's already made a move and it's up 70%. So those are just all from a while ago. And they have not been kicked off. We had a whole bunch of stocks kicked off. Summit Financial up 39.8% got kicked off. Pfizer's up finally 16%. Another stock, Netflix, got kicked off. GameStop got kicked off at a 17% gain. Asana Inc., it did get kicked off.
Yeah, it got kicked off.
It was with a slight gain. Yeah. It's a Peter Thiel pick. And then New Oriental Education.
Yeah, got whacked.
Wasn't
long for this world.
That's good because it helps shorten. The list was getting too long.
Yeah. Cleaned it up. Workhorse has to stay and hold a little bit or else it's going to get kicked off too. Something's got to come out about that. I have one pick for this week, Affirm Holdings, which is the buy now, pay later company of the U.S. That's the big one that everybody talks about. There was a rumor today that possibly Apple was going to work with them, which I'm not sure I believe that due to the fact that Apple already has a whole credit card system and all that with Goldman through Marcus. So I'm not sure, but nonetheless, we did see that this other company was bought. There's maybe some excitement around the sector. So I'm going to add that to the list.
All right. I'm going to pick Amgen, AMGN.
Really? Amgen?
It's going up and down and up and down and up and down. And this is based on insiders. Some insider just bought a bunch and figure, maybe they know something. Maybe there's a merger coming.
Insiders. Let's see here. Insiders. I can't spell insiders. Okay. We're right at the hour mark. Got to go.
All right. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right. I look forward to it.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.